Welcome to the Great Coaches Podcast.
To me, being perfect is not about that scoreboard out there.
This is a chance of a lifetime.
When you can understand the person, you can then work towards a common goal.
We are all on the same team.
Know your role and do it to the best of your ability.
Focus on the fundamentals. We've gone over time and time again.
Your defense has got to be better.
Leave no doubt tonight.
Great moments are born from great opportunity.
Hello and welcome to the Great Coaches Podcast, where we believe that there is no algorithm for leadership, and so we interview great sports coaches from around the world to try and find ideas to help all of us lead our families, our colleagues, and our teams better. Our great coach on this episode is Franco Smith. As a rugby player, he represented South Africa, as well as playing for clubs in Italy, France, and Wales. He started his professional coaching career in 2006 with the South African team, the Cheetahs. Then in 2008, he became head coach of Benetton in Italy, guiding them to two national championships, a Coppa Italia and a Super Cup. In 2015, he became head coach of the Cheetahs and led them to two Currie Cup titles in 2016 and 2019. In 2019, he was appointed head coach of the Italian national team, and then in 2022, was appointed coach of the Glasgow Warriors. In his first year with them, he led them to a top four URC finish, as well as guiding them to their first European final. Franco has terrific energy, and he combines this with a deep sense of faith to guide his approach to coaching and life. Some of the highlights from our interview were how he sees rugby as a vehicle to change people's lives for the better, and his role is to challenge them to unlock their potential. The role that selflessness plays in his coaching philosophy and the lengths he goes to unlock this within the team. How he uses psychological profiling to get to know his players on a deeper level so that he can find the best way to connect with them. And his view that people often put limitations on themselves and how he tries to work with this to help people understand that they are better than they think. And just before we go to the interview, if you enjoy listening to the podcast and would like to learn more, you can head over to our website, thegreatcoachespodcast.com, where you will discover exclusive audio and podcast content for your enjoyment. And now, please enjoy our interview with Franco Smith.
You're listening to the Great Coaches Podcast.
Franco Smith, good evening, my time. Good morning, your time, and welcome to the Great Coaches Podcast.
Good morning. Lovely to be part of it.
Thank you for carving out a little bit of time to talk to us about all things rugby. Of course, with the World Cup on its way, everyone's excited to get into rugby mode. But could I start with something simple, Franco? Could you tell us where you are in the world and what you've been doing so far today?
Yeah, I'm in Scotland. I'm in Glasgow. I've rushed into the office this morning. Some of the boys are busy with the preseason preparation, so good to see some of them. Got quite a big staff out here, eager to get going and looking forward to the new season. So a couple of meetings this morning quickly to align everybody for what's needed in the next couple of weeks and today specifically. So, yes, we're in preseason, although all the boys are not in here yet. We've commenced our new season, looking into the 2023-2024 season.
Well, thank you for carving out a little bit of time for us to talk all things rugby. And I think I'd like to start by name-checking a couple of great coaches, two South Africans, Nick Mallett and Rassie Erasmus, and of course, Connor O'Shea, the Irishman. We've had Connor on the show, but you've worked with those coaches. You've seen them up close. So I'd like to ask you, what do you think it is the great coaches do differently that sets them apart?
Now, first of all, I think it's different ideas and different beliefs and a different way of doing it and a different way to, you know, organize the passion that you have for the sport. So, and then I think one important ingredient is also to understand your limitations. And I think that is what a great coach is about, is not always being right, but thorough and strong in your beliefs and making sure, you know, that you'll be able to follow through what you believe in. Yes, I've worked with Rassi many years. We both started the coaching in 2005 together. Jacques Nienaber at that stage was actually the physio slash trainer because of the lack of budget. So the three of us started together in 2005 coaching. And so I've worked with him, and I know, you know, how firm and strongly he believed, but also how he adapted during the years. Nick obviously coached me through the 17 test matches we won consecutively when I was playing for South Africa. And yeah, he's a passionate guy. He's very hard on what's right and what's wrong and how you express yourself. So yes, again, somebody that believes that believes strongly in what the in the passion of the game and how you apply yourself. And then obviously Connor, more of a guy that manages well and somebody that you know, engages everybody, gets some good coaches on board. His favorite saying is that rugby is an easy game. So the main thing for him was all about organizing, getting more people with knowledge in the right places to influence the team. So again, if you sum up that, my summary in that is just you must stick with your beliefs. You must try and get it across understandably to whoever you're coaching and what players you're working with.
Well, let's go back to the start, shall we? Because you started life as a school teacher. You were a geography teacher, I understand. But what's more amazing is you do this 360-kilometer, I don't know what that is in miles for other mile-based listeners, but you do this massive journey every day to train. And this was on top of the training you do in the morning. So I wanted to ask you, what did that dedication and sacrifice teach you that is visible in your coaching philosophy today?
Yeah, I think the reasons I did that was obviously that the fact that it wasn't professional, but it was going to become, and, you know, we wanted to live a dream. So for me, I always believe that if you want your water to be turned into wine, you must at least fill the casks, you know, and you can't expect the rain if the fields are not prepared. So that was always my feeling. And every time I've had success in my life is when I worked really hard, not hard, very hard at it. So I was fitter and stronger, or I anticipated better. And even in my coaching career, you know, there's no place for complacency. And that I taught myself through that discipline. It was tough, you know, at that time. But I was young enough and eager enough, and I was full of belief in what can happen. So it actually made it easy. Looking back now, it's one of the best lessons I can, teach or learn of that I've learned, and I can teach to the players that I'm involved with now, is that success comes through hard work. You've got to fill your cask if you want it to turn into wine. And you know, being a believer, I know that you know, you earn you must earn your wage through hard work, through the sweat on your brow. So that was always my philosophy, and through the grace, I mean, it always paid off well, and it gave me and put me in a good position to go to the next job. I've never applied for a job in my life. I've never applied for a job. It always came to me. I was always invited into a new environment, and therefore I still believe the fact that you work hard and you have certain principles and discipline in that regard gives you the best chance of being the best version of yourself.
Well, you worked hard. You took lots of played obviously for South Africa. Then you took lots of assistant jobs and you worked your way up. In your first head coaching role was with Benetton. But what's amazing is it was instant success. You know, you won the national championships, the Coppa Italia and the Super Cup. It's a great start to being a head coach. But when you reflect on that time, what do you remember finding most challenging in that leadership role?
Yeah, again, I just want to put a little bit of perspective on it. I played there in the end of my career, so I knew the environment where I was going in. I was obviously, it was 2.5 years after I've stopped playing there. So nothing's changed. The same CEO was there. There's a lot of the players that I knew was there and about. So I understood the challenge very well. So that was obviously a big benefit. I was a only coach. There was no assistant coaches back in the day. I knew it what took me a little bit out of my comfort zone, in the sense that I had to coach forwards, backs, defense, attack, the kicking environment. And I had fortunately, I've got a degree in sports science, so I could help the S&C coach a little bit in that regard. But, you know, the main thing was I came from a super rugby background back then. I coached 3 years in the super rugby in 2005, 2006 and 2007. And obviously that professionalism had to be taken to a country that wasn't at that stage professional at all. The way they trained and the intensity, the density of trainings, the way, the detail around that was a little bit too much. I think one of the big challenges there was, you could run this beautiful place with beautiful dummy lines, but nobody fell for the dummy lines. And that means they just ended up in the wrong place. And you looked a little bit out of sorts then from a player's perspective and from Plamek perspective, because even the opposition was not in the same level that we were used to. And then obviously you have to then find a way to make blind people see. I think therefore even the referees in that country at that stage was battling, because the ruck speed was up so high that the other teams couldn't get back on site, and couldn't penalize. They couldn't blow the whistle 65 times for penalty. So that was challenging. I think also the way I wanted to manage the players, that was a big challenge for the CEO that was current in that position. They went from one international suddenly to 27 internationals, and obviously the price of the players went up, their value in that regard, although there was always a feeling that Italian players weren't really of interest of any club outside of Italy. That still meant that they were needed to and wanted to be paid at a certain level. So, and then obviously the supporters, they were frustrated in the beginning. I won the first game that I've coached in Italy with 70 points, and the very next one lost with 33 points without scoring one point. So, then it was just that hot and cold that leads into a good team that was really frustrating. But then obviously finding proper gym equipment, setting up a proper S&C system, getting the doctors. I had three doctors at that stage there. So I had a GP, I had an orthopedic surgeon, one of them, and then I had a biomechanicist that also had influence. And I had to run my medical report through all of them to make sure that I've got the right stage. So much so that I ended up doing my own research on how long a player will be injured and what is the rehab program to make sure that they get it right. So yes, I introduced a lot of professionalism into Italian rugby. For the first time, they did individual warm-ups and not collectively like everybody was used to. So a big challenge in that regard, but the fact that they were prepared to learn, and the fact that they were prepared to, work hard. I moved and changed their perception about hard work completely and what it takes. So, mainly the fact that they were so open and eager to learn led to the success.
What's fascinating about your career is you've, as both a player and a coach, you've taken a lot of sideways steps. You haven't always gone straight forward for bigger roles. And I'm wondering if this was deliberate and why you chose to build a career like this.
Yeah, it was definitely deliberate. I want to be the best coach. I'm 50 years old now, and I think I've seen the whole world. I wanted to coach teams that needs to perform above their level. I think talent, obviously talent beats hard work. If talent works hard, and I always thought that and most of the teams that I work with did not have the talent, so I wanted to prove to talent that by working hard, even less talented people can perform above their levels. And obviously, I think in sport, there's a lot of perception. There's a lot of preconceived ideas about your own potential, about your own ability. And it was my challenge to let people understand that they are better than they think they are. I think they've put their own, we put our own limitations on ourselves. I feel rugby is a sport that's still growing into becoming something extraordinary, and there's still a lot of limits and the perimeters to move. And if we work with talent and that wins anyway, we're not going to move those barriers. So I wanted to equip myself to work with different cultures, to work across borders with people that will surprise themselves and then everybody else. That stays my philosophy. If if the last words for the team always is, let's go out there, let's surprise ourselves and then everybody else. And I think the main concern for me was, or main thing for me is that healthy people don't need a doctor. And I just think I've got an ability, and I was blessed with the opportunity to, you know, just influence people, and then they'll take that idea of performing better than they expected, you know, into their own lives. They have confidence in conversations. They will set themselves up for life. They will be comfortable in front of their kids once they become parents. They will really believe, and therefore I chose to work with people. I also wanted to learn. I also wanted to get it wrong. You know, if you work with players and teams that can get it wrong sometimes, then you can actually try and be innovative and be a little bit think a little bit out of the box and try new things. And if it comes off, it's gold. If it doesn't come off, then at least, you know, next time this is the way. And I think for me, the main benefit of all that experience was that I now can put the program together in a much shorter time. I don't need years. I don't need months. I know now, you know, what is the right and the quick and the rapid path to touch the right nerves. And then obviously to concentrate on the detail, I know that teams that has to be better than the opposition that's probably better equipped must be more detail driven, they must have worked much harder. So I like to stand in the change room and say, are we fitter than them? Are we better prepared? Yes. So just concentrate on the process and get us to the other side of the line. And that then allows also players with talent that's worked hard to express themselves in the environment. I don't coach the ball carrier. I don't coach the main main figure. I try and coach everybody around the player that's got the ball so that the eager is allowed to, you know, just express himself. And through my experience as in this area of working with players that was not necessarily the best in the world, I could really surprise myself and then the team in that regard.
Well, it's obviously worked because there is a clear theme in the story of your coaching, and it's around the immediate improvement of your teams, whether it's Shimlas, Benetton, the Cheetahs, or now Glasgow. There's four examples of where you've taken over a team and they've experienced rapid improvement almost overnight in the next season. And I'm wondering, Franco, is there any similarities in the things that you do first when you start with a new team that allows this to happen?
No, I think all coaches set the objective or a target. I try and set a dream there for the players, you know, a dream, something that sometimes feel is too big for them to achieve. And I still believe if you don't, if you don't dream big, and it's not a philosophy that I've worked on. I think it's all over the internet. People are saying you must dream big. But then I obviously try and find a road, a pathway, a practical, physical for that matter, pathway to that dream. So, and it obviously starts with that belief in their own capability and their own creativity and in their own talent that was given to them to obviously get to this this dream that we are talking about. I think the main important thing of a dream is that there must be specific process to it. They must understand what is practically needed. And I think that is where I've developed. I had to coach intensity when I went to Italy. And as a coach, Benetton did very, very well in the Italian competition. We won everything like you've mentioned before, but we always failed to produce in Europe when we played in the Heineken Cup. So the one thing I noticed is that the intensity levels, because we were not challenged so much in Italy, but because of the fact that we were so dominant, we had to up our intensity to be competitive with the real big names in Europe. So I coached intensity, which allowed me to develop drills that would grow, that people actually have to do something to get to what they want. And that is where it comes, that then the same for me came from. That you can't wish something to happen. You have to do something. You can't will something. you must really do something to get what you want. And I think that is where the key lies, is to set the dream out there, get the pathway, and show them practical steps, and then change their perception about themselves, because I think that is the only way you go to your dream. They must, in week one or week two, must already, through the theoretical part of the game or through the practical part that we've done out on the field, realize that they are stepping, they're actually walking up this mountain towards the dream. And once that belief sets in, it actually self-generates the enthusiasm and the creativity around the team.
Franco, I've heard you in other interviews refer to the players on the ground and their personalities. You describe them in different ways. For instance, you talk about one of them as a knight. And it was only a small piece of a dialogue in an interview, but I was intrigued by it. And I'm wondering, is there a way that you classify people so that you are able to understand them and ignite this belief in them that you just talked about?
No, I think most companies use the DISC profile. There's a company that did restarted the research in 1984 and through the NFL collecting, because I think NFL is the closest other sport, the real contact sport, where you are really challenged as a man sometimes, you know, not going to give an inch, not going to give a meter. You make collisions, you have to get off the floor and make another action, and triple actions, double actions, you've got to be involved. And that challenges you as a person. So why would you stand up another time? Why would you do this again? Why would you not flinch in front of contact? Or what makes you a determined person? And what makes you believe in what the coach asks you to do? So there's a hard brick wall in front of you. Do the coach help you to find the soft spot in it? And then that belief, that obviously, you know, it leads direct to the, from my perspective, on the type of person you are, the personality that you've been born with, that was nurtured. So there's two big things we've got to talk about. There's character and there's personality. So this personality traits are people that's has been influenced with it through their parents and through their school teachers and nursery teachers back in the day, and they've nurtured this person's personality. So for me to get the best out of him, it's important to understand what type of person is he. Some people like to be, you know, confronted directly and halftime talk specifically. You know, it's a short time to get a lot of info across. So if somebody is distracted or is not, and I didn't understand his personality trait, I might get it wrong and he might run out there less enthusiastic or nervous, or right and wrong for him is too important, then he'll choose to keep the ball instead of pass it, or pass it instead of keeping it. So it was for me important to, you know, to understand that. And this program obviously gives you eight different type of personalities. We did an online test and I got to know more or less what each player was about, all under pressure and when he was not under pressure. That obviously allows my team talks during the week to be different than in the change room or just prior to the game. Some players like to be talked to individually and not collectively. They don't like to be confronted in front of other people. So and then obviously that your team develops a character or personality, develops a personality, and that personality usually is linked to the coach's personality. So the knight is specifically, I'm just, because you've mentioned that the knight is somebody that cares, that wants to protect somebody else, doesn't like to be wrong. It doesn't like to turn around when it missed the road. It doesn't want to ask somebody else for directions when he got it wrong. He drives the same way to work every day when he goes to work, you know. So that's people that does not like to be veered off the. So if I'm going to confront them with the stop signs and directions, it almost make sure that I get the message across right, so that he leaves the change room confident to go and, you know, give more of himself on the field that's needed. Because I think we all coaches strive to 110, 120% performance and elevation of the ability every week. So then through that personality traits, I know then and understand what type of player I need to speak to in what way. And it usually works.
Ah, it sounds very good.
I'm wondering, as you talk, what kind of character I would be, but I'll take the disc later on and I'll see how I come out. Franco, you often talk about your values. It's in all of your interviews. In fact, I've got a nice quote from you, and you say, because values is not just what you take onto the field. It's not just about winning games. It's about how you live your life, how you become that hero everybody wants to be, and the example for young kids in the future. And I'm curious, what are the values that travel with you as a leader?
So first of all, I hold myself responsible for something more than just people's opinion. So my own standards are very high. I believe, like I said, I'm a believer, and I've got a brand called For God's Glory. So hashtag For God's Glory. So it's all about, you know, being measured for what you contribute in life. I'm a giver, not a getter. So I always encourage my players that you come here to give, not to get. The fact that you get a salary at the end of the month, that's one thing. But you are here to give, to, you know, and I think rugby is a very good example of a sport that can be played in heaven, where you give the ball to somebody else always in a better position for him maybe to score a try. You know, it's the most selfless game. Sometimes you need to give the ball to somebody else and, you know, and work hard to put him in a good position to, you know, to maybe score a try. So I think through that vision, I obviously, you know, encourage people to, you know, to look further and beyond the rugby field. What values? Rugby is a sport of different shapes and sizes. It's got tall people, short people. It's got fat people in it. It's got quick people, slower people. But there's a role, and it actually represents the population of the world, isn't it? There's an all environment. It actually represents the whole team. Represents the population of the world, in the sense that you know, they can identify with the characters that's on the field, and therefore the responsibility is that it doesn't matter what shape or size, do you push in front or do you score at the back, you represent somebody, and somebody will believe in you, and somebody will look up to you for direction, and therefore, you know, values like, you know, being respect and honesty, you know, honesty also not just with your teammates, but with then taking it home, being honest with your wife, being honest with your parents, your friends, your family, you know, the discipline aspect that comes off it, you know, the how do you teach your kids what's the difference between right and wrong? I hope and always to my kids was the same message. You must just have the ability to understand what's the difference, and that is then my job done. I don't want to tell you what's the difference. So we believe in trust. So the responsibility of our outcome is shared, and same in your household or same in your working environment where you're going to be after rugby. And then obviously, you know, a lot of things I've written down: kindness, fairness. How do you handle a setback? How do you handle success? I know that life is not fair. The quickest person doesn't always win the race. But how do you handle that? How do you take that to the day when you can't take that forward to the day when you can't play rugby anymore? And I think that is what rugby does. Rugby chisels you to be the best person in life. So I feel that, you know, good people makes good players. The more we influence the community, the more example we set to the people that come and watch our games, our attitude towards other people, how you treat them is very important. So I think rugby is a vehicle to change people's lives. I think sport in general is a vehicle to change people's lives. If you've played basketball, you play netball, you play whatever sport, it's always about, you know, should not be about you. It's always about somebody else. And I think when you take that into your life, it's important. And then again, I always work from the last hour of my life back. What is going to be important, really important? Nobody's going to remember the losses. You'll always remember the gains. And you will be remembered for the person you were, not for the type of rugby player or the type of sportsman you were. So for me, that is the reason why I think I can challenge people to be better than they can be on the field, because there isn't a limit to it. They decide, you as a player decide where your limits sit and where you if you want to go beyond that. And I think in life it works like that. I think it's easy to be a participant in a company, you know, just collect your salary at the end of the month and not actually progress and do the work that you want to, that the company needs of you and that they want of you. You know, to be a little bit, or to be first at the desk and last to leave is not always. There's a lot of place to hide in the world and still get paid and still get financial benefit of it. And I just feel, you know, so the world needs honest people, and that's what it was built on up to now. And I think rugby is that vehicle to send a bunch of, you know, so how many men that retires every year and go into the into an environment of a work environment and or a different community environment, they can use that success that they've had and turn it into significance.
You mentioned your faith in that answer, you know, for God's glory, hashtag for God's glory. You have talked about your faith a lot, but also how this shapes your view of the way people build a sense of belonging to the club, their families, their communities. In rugby, with players coming and going and coaches coming and going so often, how do you go about building a sense of belonging?
So yeah, that brings me to the second. So there's personality and there's character. So character is what might define you as a person, I think. And then, so I think you can have a personality, you can test that personality, and you will probably, you know, always, you will die having that personality. But your character can change your personality. Your character is something that you built through giving some pieces of yourself in one dream and one belief with other players in that immediate environment or coaches. And I think that is the brilliant thing of modern day professional sport, is that for a short period, you are allowed to give everything to everything with the in the environment that you currently represent. So for me, I think everything was there before us and everything will be there after us. But for a short period, you have an opportunity to be your best. And that is character. So I believe, you know, we all talk about the team showed some character, or his character, there's some good character towards the end if they were in difficult situations or if they pulled off a win from nowhere. But I honestly feel that through character, a team's character, and through individual character building, it changes the personality and the original me first mentality, you know. And I think through by creating the same objective, giving the same opportunity to everybody in the whole squad, not just the best 4 or 5 or 15 players in your team, give the right opportunity to everybody, give the same attention to detail, the same input to every person, not allowing complacency to come in between us. For that short time, and with a mission to make you as a person a better player. So you're going to leave this club. Maybe you're going to leave this club being a better player and a better person. And that is my commitment to you. So all coaches and players that I work with from the start, promise them that I will give my best. If you start every week or you don't start every week, I will give you the same attention, the same opportunity. Maybe not always in a game, because you can only pick 23 every week, but the effort during the week and the opportunity for you to become the best you can be, I will definitely buy into. That, I think, if that's understood by the whole team through our various themes that we run during the week, then you create a sense of belonging. I want to be part of whatever the outcome currently is. And then, obviously, there's a big understanding in the world that you have seasons of in life. And if your season is at the Glasgow Warriors, or your season is at any other club, and it's over, then you take that experience on. But hopefully, you leave something behind, and you take something with you. And I think that is the way. If I can get that message across from the start, then that sense of belonging is created from the start.
A powerful, powerful idea, this idea of character being built by giving pieces of yourself. And I think maybe just to finish, Franco, I'd like to ask you, you've coached all over the world. You've coached all different cultures. You've touched many, many lives and communities as well as you've traveled. But when you do hang up that whistle, how do you hope the people that you've touched and been engaged with, how do you hope that they describe the legacy that you've left?
Yeah, I think the first thing is I've got the three L's: live, love, learn, and leave a legacy. That's always the three or the four things that drive me. Leave a legacy is maybe, and that comes through enthusiasm, creativity, and your contribution. So I've got, I hope people would see is I've seen the world, you know, and through that, I've taken my experience along everywhere. I can share stories. Sometimes I might be a little bit frustrating for some of the guys to hear some of the stories, but you know, you learn through that, and to be able to tell a story means that I've lived, and that is an important part, you know. The second part is love. We talk about care I care in a rugby community, because it's not always about love, you know, but I care for the environment, I care for the players that sit next to me in the changing room, I care for the supporters, so they want to see a certain brand. I care when I get up in the mornings, that gets me going, and I care when I go to bed at night, feeling that I've given this week. So care is for me important. So that's the love part. Obviously, I get attached easily, and I think because I live with my heart on my sleeve, it's easy for some of the players and coaches to follow and to make that part of the of this sense of belonging that we've spoken about before. So I'm open and honest with my feelings. What you see is what you get, and sometimes, you know, from a coaching perspective, that's very important for them to know that it's authentic. It's not fake. I'm not trying to, you know, to convince them to do something special just because it's fake. It's really authentic. And I try to learn something every day. I go out of my way to find something to learn. If that is in a Netflix drama, then I'll do that. But, you know, I've watched various artists, their stories. I've been, I want to learn from all environments that's available out there. So yeah, learn is really important. And then obviously the legacy that you talk about is more about being significant and not successful. I think success is bestowed or is given to people not for their own benefit, but to be an example to others, you know, and through success you become significant. So my philosophy stays that I don't want to be successful because I've been at top of the world, won the Currie Cup twice or whatever, was involved with the Tri Nations, I've coached South Africa, but disappointment happens on the other side of the door anytime. So that should not influence and deprive you of motivation to get up the next morning and just go again. So for me, the legacy would be significance. That means away from the game, I do not want to be remembered as a rugby coach. I want in the players that I work with, you know, must look back when I've done with them in 10, 15 years and say, look, I've learned something. I've got a better contract after I've worked with them. I suddenly have an inheritance that I can pass down to my kids because I worked hard at a certain stage with me as the coach. So, and hopefully they will go and influence the communities and long after they've played rugby, still be, you know, influential people. And that is for me what I want to be remembered for, and the legacy what I want to leave behind. And therefore, you know, I've done it. I've lived down South Africa a long time. I've worked in Italy on various occasions, also as the performance director there, and to have had the opportunity to, you know, influence the various clubs and create a bit of belief in people's minds and hearts, and to see them grow through it, that I think is important. But again, I hope they remember the significant part of it.
Belief in people's minds and hearts and significance is probably a great place for us to finish. Franco, thank you so much for your time today and for the depth and authenticity with which you've answered my humble little questions. I wish you all the best for the season ahead, and I hope you go one step further this year and get that championship.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. It was good to be on it.
Hi everyone, you have been listening to the great coach, Franco Smith. I hope you got a lot out of Franco's energetic and inspiring style and found a few ideas that you can bring to your own dinner table, locker room or boardroom table for discussion. When I listened back, the other key highlights for me were his career choices of taking on teams where there might be less talent to prove that hard work can lead to you performing better than expected. His focus on the importance of a strong work ethic and the metaphor he uses to explain this of, if you want your water to be turned into wine, you must at least fill the casks. That the great coaches understand their limitations so they don't always have to be right, but at the same time they are strong in their beliefs. And wanting to leave a legacy of being significant, not just successful. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. And just before we go, if you have any feedback, then please let us know. Just like Stuart Waddington, who said, definitely a great 30-minute investment, sport, business, life, all based on common principles, but achievements are based on uncommon vision and discipline. Thanks, Stuart. We love the interaction with the people around the world who listen. And so if you have any feedback or comments, please let us know. And if they're positive ones, then please let your friends know too. All the details on how to connect with us are in the show notes or on our website, thegreatcoachespodcast.com.